It must be every debut novelist's dream to have a titan of fiction. Like Salman Rushdie described their work as captivating and delightful. Well, that's what he said about The Pleasure Seekers, the novel by Indian poet, journalist and dancer Tishani Doshi. It's a story which explores different sorts of love. We meet Babo in Madras. He's leaving India to work in London, where he meets the beautiful Shan, a Welsh girl who's moved away from the security of her parents' home for the first time. There's electricity between them, but their union causes ructions in each other's families. We follow their fortunes from the 60s to the present. We meet their children, and we travel with them between Madras, London and Wales. The book shows Sarah Lestrange spoke to Tishani Doshi about The Pleasure Seekers.
The year is 1968. Indira Gandhi is Prime Minister in India. The Beatles visit an ashram in Rishikesh. Bollywood is basking in the success of the Hindi spy film Unkang. And in the Patel family, another drama is unfolding. The eldest son is leaving home. This is where Tishani Doshi begins her tender and funny debut novel, The Pleasure Seekers. It begins with a dream.
In the early hours of August 20th, 1968, the morning of his son's departure, Prem Kumar Patel succumbed to a luxury he had never, in all his 47 years of living, experienced before. He had a dream. It was a long, terrible dream that seemed to take him back to the coils of his mother's womb and hurl him to the end of his life, to a valley submerged in ice. In this dream, Prem Kumar was climbing mountains, trying to find his wife and four children. They were lost to him, in a strange kingdom where men carried the ghosts of ancestors on their backs and women hid in trees throwing poison-tipped arrows. Prem Kumar, standing in front of a great wooden doorway, could hear his children screaming. Babu, especially, his eldest, who was cold and wanted extra blankets to sleep, who wasn't used to this bite in the air that was making him turn from a dark shade of walnut to a pasty pistachio. Babu kept calling out to Prem Kumar, "Why did you send me here? Why did you send me away?" And the other children, Meenal, Dolly and Chotu, cried in chorus after him, "Why did you send him away? Why did you send our brother away?" When Prem Kumar finally woke to the event of Babu's leaving, it was with dark circles under his eyes and the wide expanse of his nose rutted with a rash of mosquito bites. From the distance, he could hear his neighbor, Darius Mazda's daily morning balcony diatribe, till Prem Kumar, for the first time in their neighborly association, wanted to walk over and reassure his Parsi kinsmen in suffering that no one was trying to do away with him, that in fact it was he, Prem Kumar, who was the target of a far greater suffering.
That far greater suffering bemoaned by Prem Kumar Patel is particular to his life. His eldest son, Babu, is leaving home, leaving Madras, leaving India for London. It's the sort of suffering experienced by the head of a household, the patriarch of a family.
Well, Prem Kumar is a kind of sort of very one-dimensional character in the sense his family is his most important thing and his work, and he believes very much in the idea of duty. And so for him, sending his son away at that time, which was a very big deal, he was the first person in the family to go on a plane, Babu was, and there was a lot of responsibility given to him. So in his mind, it was just that he would go get the necessary education and expertise that he needed and would come back. But of course, Babu has his own plans, as we find out as the book goes along. And that those other intrusions are what really get Prem Kumar into a twist.
Which we discover as we read along. And these far greater sufferings, I guess, are balanced by the great lightness and joy of your writing. You have such a dexterity with your words. Is that the poet coming through from all those years of writing poetry?
I think so. I think writing poetry has both helped and really made writing a novel very difficult. I think when you write poetry, you're very, very interested in language as a first priority. And so each sentence, each word, you know, you pay a great attention to that, and perhaps less attention to narrative structure. And as I wrote the book, I realized that, you know, the beauty of a novel is its architecture and its structure. So I had to kind of learn those things, which you don't necessarily explore as a poet. I do feel that I had a great, great sort of enjoyment playing with sentences and weaving these things. But I did struggle with the whole methodology of writing a novel.
Well, the struggle paid off. Just in terms of that language and part of the humour of this book, a part that made me chuckle very early on when Bobo was about to leave his first love and very quickly ditched first love, I think mm-hmm. it was 12 weeks and 5 days yeah. to be exact, Falguni mm-hmm. says to him with a lisp, she mm-hmm. would not path a single day in happiness. Yes. So you're obviously enjoying yourself too.
Yes. I think, again, with my poetry, the themes tend to be much more a reaction to the world around, things that are generally not very uplifting and that upset you, or violence, whatever. But with the novel, I discovered that you can have this humor in writing. And I did enjoy that aspect very much.
In London, Barbo meets Sian. She's Welsh and beautiful. He sports a rock star hairdo. They decide to marry despite the distance between their cultures and families. They are the pleasure seekers of the title, the breakaways from tradition. Sian from her Welsh roots, Barbo from his parents' authority and Jain religion. Their stories echo Tishani Doshi's own parents' lives.
The book is very loosely based on my parents' love story. My father is a Gujarati boy who has a Jain background. My mother is from a Welsh little village in North Wales, and they did get married in the 60s. A lot of the details are changed, of course, but I thought it was actually quite a remarkable thing that they embarked on, and I always knew that I would try to explore that, because I think people still have problems with that in this day and age when we seem to be so liberated with so many choices. I think to actually drop everything and move halfway across the world and to live with somebody and to adjust to their cultural differences and to really thrive in that situation despite all the obstacles, I think there's something beautiful about that, and it really renewed my sense of the idea of love. And so I wanted to write about that, and I wanted to write about the idea of pleasure, which I think people always think of as, you know, hedonistic or something over the top, and that's something you shouldn't do. Whereas I thought of pleasure as something very integral. It's your desires. It's what you want at the center of your life. So why should you not have that? And if it's falling in love or if it's some other passion, then, people make sacrifices and they deny themselves those things. And I think, well, no, why would you do that?
This novel is about love, but it's about the different shapes that love comes in as well. And it's also about how we can be confused by love. So while we have that central relationship between Bobo and Sian framing the novel and taking us through quite a few decades, we meet other characters who have trouble with love, like
yes.
Their daughter Bean, who is trying to replicate their love. It can't really be replicated, can it?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to explore the different nuances and shades of love stories, because, you know, so you have Babu and Sian at the center. They're the sort of ideal once in a lifetime kind of love. But then it's also the love between sisters, love between strangers, the love between a grandmother and grandchild. And, I think the being the product of this kind of very ideal love relationship, the drawback is that then you go out into the world thinking that you're going to have it as well. And of course, it may or may not happen. And so, both the daughters, in fact, struggle with their choices and their ideas of love.
Did you get any closer to understanding what love is in the process of writing this novel?
I don't know. I think I might just confuse myself. I'm not sure that I got any great, epiphany out of it. I think, though, that I've always been quite strong in the idea that love is the one thing that we have that, and when I say love, I don't just mean romantic love, but just the feeling of love. You know, I've always believed it's crucial for the creative process, just the feeling of being in love with your life, your world, the things around you. And if you can't connect, that means I feel that you've lost some ability to build that bridge between you and the other thing. So love is just, that's what I see it as. And if you lose that, then to me, it's a bit like being tossed in the desert without any water. And it just, life doesn't seem worth it.
But love, as we all know, is not easy. And in the Jain religion, it's one of the five thieves of the body, along with greed, affection, desire, and pride. We learn this in The Pleasure Seekers from the enigmatic character Bar, the wise grandmother who lives in Gujarat, far away from the rest of the family. She wants to warn her grandchildren that these five thieves are always lurking around, ready to devastate the sanctity of the spirit and the mind. It's a warning in a way to the pleasure seekers. Bar's role is something of a mystic in this book. Unlike Babo and Chan, her life began on the page rather than in real life.
She was never going to be a major person in the book, but like sometimes happens in books, she just sort of dominated more and more. And I realized that she was going to be the person who... She's a kind of the magic realism element in my book. I never went back to Gujarat to research the village that my father came from because I felt that the imagination is much stronger sometimes than reality. And I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to have to deal with the middle-sized Indian town and be kind of disgusted by its noise and this and that. So I just imagined it. And Ba's house, it's kind of based on my dance teacher's house. I worked with Chandralekha, a dancer in India for a long time, and she was a great influence on me. And she had this kind of open house where people would come in and out, and it was very free and very different from the places I'd seen. And I think that house very much became Ba's house in the book. It's a place where anything can happen and where problems are solved and ideas are, you know, spoken about.
Was Chandralekha your dance teacher who you met when you were 26? Did she feature in this novel in some way?
You know, I think when you meet somebody who changes your life so drastically, when you meet them, there's no way but for them to sort of seep into your ideas. And definitely one thing was I became a dancer suddenly at a very late age of 26, something that I wasn't planning to do. But also in terms of the themes and the subjects that I was writing about, I was very concerned with the body as an area of, as an area of geography, sexuality, politics, and just looking at myself as a woman in the context of where I was. And yeah, even her life. I'm sure that she's in there everywhere, but it's very hard to pinpoint and say, well, this is what is based on. I mean, I think, and that's actually the beauty of fiction, is that you don't need to be truthful. You can take what you need from real life, but then you have the right to let your imagination just take over and make it something different.
The theme of home is very strong throughout this novel. And it's strong because we have Shan coming from England, mm-hmm. deciding to just throw everything in and live in India, which is a big step, as you say. Mm. And so she struggles with her sense of home. But it's not just the foreigner in the new city, new country, that struggles with it. Bean, for instance, their daughter, struggles with it too. And then we have this idea of Ignatius, the hermaphrodite, mm-hmm. struggling to live in two worlds. So that's something else you're looking at, that you can be in one place and still feel that you don't belong.
Yeah. There's this great line in the writer Suketu Mehta. He wrote a book called Maximum City about Bombay, and he uses this line called the adulterous citizen, that when you're in one city, you're dreaming of the other. And to me, it's just encapsulated entirely how I feel and how probably many people feel. I think we live in an age where there's such a high level of mobility, whether it's going from the village to the city, from country to country. And sometimes, of course, it's forced your person who's migrating because of a situation in your home war or political instability, but whatever it is, we're moving. And to me, that incredible amount of movement, it tosses up all these issues. And definitely, I suffer from the syndrome of one foot in, the other foot out. You know, I'm always trying to find my center, trying to find my place, you know, and I love being like that. But it does question the idea of what is home. How do you define that? And what does it mean to you? And, you know, to be rooted or to be uprooted. Those are sort of obsessions of mine.
In fact, when you were in England, you were thinking about writing this book about India, so you felt you had to come back to India to write it.
Exactly. Well, I mean, that was also a very economic reason, and I felt that I could live cheaply in India, also in a warmer place, and I was fed up of London's grey skies, so I left. But yeah.
Very sensible. No grey skies in The Pleasure Seekers. It's dripping with the colour and heat we associate with Indian fiction. It's reminiscent of the multi-generational sweep of Rohinton Mysteries, A Fine Balance, the lyricism of Arundhati Roy's God of Small Things. I also felt it was a reverse of British author Hanif Qureshi's The Buddha of Suburbia. It's set in London, while The Pleasure Seekers is set in Madras. Tashani Joshi has, of course, read them all. But music is more her constant creative companion.
For me, the relationship between music and words is very strong, and I feel that I've been almost more inspired by music than I have been by writing, because I listen to something and I try to create that same level of, I don't know, euphoria or something with the sentence. And I am trying to create musical sentences with the poetry. So, I mean, it's everything. It's people, it's writers, it's music.
Were you listening to music when you were writing this?
Yeah, you know, I work with musicians who come from a classical Hindustani tradition. They live in Madhya Pradesh in India, and it's one of the oldest forms of music, and they work with their voices. And I think I probably listen to them, to their music every day when I wrote this. It's just a very, it's a very spiritual, meditative, deep kind of thing. And they do things with their voices that I just think, wow, it's such dexterity, such beauty. If I believed in heaven, I wish I could hear that when I died kind of thing. And so I listen to that, but I also listen to Western classical, to jazz, to, you know, lots of things. But I think their music is very special to me. No.
That's the music of the Gundecha brothers, who are Tashani Doshi's favourite musicians at the moment. She was speaking with the book show's Sarah Lestrange, and The Pleasure Seekers is published by Bloomsbury. And in November, Tashani Doshi will be performing with her dance troupe in Sydney at the Parramatta Riverside Theatres. We'll put details on our website, abc.net.au/rn/bookshow. Well, tomorrow on The Book Show, we'll find out what it means to be an Australian poet and what it takes to make it into the new anthology Australian Poets Since 1788. Its editor, Jeff Lehman, joins us for a panel discussion with two young poets, Joanna Featherstone and Jeff Lehman. Well, you can hear The Book Show on ABC Radio National every weekday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m, except Friday evenings when you can hear Garrison Kyler instead. And please give us your comments and feedback at our website, abc.net.au/rn/bookshow, or on Twitter with the hashtag RNBooks. I'm Dominic Knight on ABC Radio National. Coming up, First Person.